This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
The debate isn't new, but the outcome might be different than it's ever been before because money is finally behind it. It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, ESPN2. Jason Fitz, Mike Golic Jr., in for all the guys. I'm really in for two of the guys. You're always here, Mike. I don't know how to clarify this, but I'm in for Trey and Senior. Mike Golic Jr., myself, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike, this is a old debate. We're used to seeing it in the past. We're hearing it again. Should the Washington football team change their name? And now it feels like maybe we have a little bit of a different answer. As yesterday, some surprising news came down. FedEx, which has the naming rights to the stadium in which the Redskins play, made a request officially Thursday that the team change its nickname. Also significant to mention that the CEO, chairman of FedEx, Fred Smith, is a minority owner in the team. So this is a little bit different than what we've seen in the past. And now what we know is that FedEx, Nike, Pepsi each received letters signed by investment firms asking that they become part of this initiative. We've seen Nike remove the Redskins stuff from their website, which I think is hugely significant. Mike, it feels like there is a different amount of momentum today than we've ever seen in the past towards an actual possibility of name change for the Washington football team.
Yeah, momentum is you can just shorten it to the first two letters, or you should take the first two letters and turn that into money. There is $600 million of potential investment firms and shareholders that are looking at this and saying, yeah, we're not down with this anymore. And you're right, with the backdrop of everything else that's gone on, when we just saw Mississippi State flag get changed because of the words and actions of a college football player at Mississippi State, all the other statues we've seen pulled down, and everything else that's been rapidly changing in the world as a response to what's gone on, it feels like it should be different, but we can talk about all those other names we want. This is a Dan Snyder, and hearing Ian Fitzsimmons, little Danny Snyder, this is a little Danny Snyder problem when it comes down to it.
Well, and let's be transparent here. You know, the funny thing is everything's been changing in the world over the last few weeks, and we've been sort of reimagining and revisiting so many issues. I even found myself just a couple of weeks ago texting you about this very issue, saying, hey, how should we feel about this? Is this going to be coming back up? And part of what I'm trying to wrap my head around is an understanding of the word and why the word is so significant. So rather than try and explain it, I'll let somebody smarter than us do that. Mary Emily O'Hara is a diversity and inclusion reporter for Adweek. She was on Freddie and Fitzsimmons last night, and she broke down brilliantly exactly what this term means.
I think that there is some misunderstanding over the roots of the word redskin. It's not just a racial slur. It's not just like other words that you use to describe a community of people when you don't like them or you want to put them down. It also has a very violent history. The word dates back to a period in U.S. history when white settlers were paid to basically go out and kill as many Native Americans as they could find. And that was, of course, a period in which the U.S. was trying to basically get rid of the people that already lived here so that Europeans could take over and settle the land.
So now, on top of that, Mike, let me throw myself under the bus, because so many people, myself included, have referenced the Washington Post survey from 2016 that says that 90% of Native Americans surveyed don't really care about the Redskins team name. I think it's important to note that I Googled it. Google's factual on everything, right? What we do know is that there's over 5 million Native Americans living in the United States. That survey that we all reference, I researched 504. So I'm not sure that there's ever been an inclusive enough survey to get an understanding of it. But when you hear what that word means, it at least makes me coil back about the concept of that being a team name for what it must feel like for so many people that hear that and are affected.
Yeah, and because we're having this conversation for the umpteenth time, we've also heard all of the arguments on the other side. Well, that's not the way that their fans are using it or intending for it anymore. It's a point of pride. Like, you hear all of these things that have mounted up, and one thing that's become increasingly clear in the recent months is, okay, you can say that, and I can believe that in your heart of hearts, as a fan of that team in 2020, maybe you're not shouting that term, meaning it to be offensive to Native Americans, but as we've seen with a number of other things, if it is still causing people pain, and there have been Native American leaders that have come out in the past and have pointed out they would like this changed, if it is bothering anyone in all of this, it's just a name. Like, that's the thing I keep coming back to, is not to say, because I know people are going to try and play that both ways. If it is causing some people pain, I don't think on the other side you can claim that that name is giving you any sort of joy that's at the level that should justify your wishes being held over the wishes of the people it actually affects. Like, that's the one thing I can't keep coming back to in this, is if the people it actually affects, outside of what we're talking about there with a small sample size, by and large are telling you, yeah, this isn't the way to go, I don't know why we're still having this conversation.
So I'll play the other side of it. Golic and Wingo, by the way, Jason Fitz, Mike Golic Jr. I'll play the other side of a little bit to what you just said, because you say it's just a name, but we have such different backgrounds. You played the game. I grew up a fan of the game. So I know so many people that hear it's just a name that are fans sort of coil back and say, oh my God, it's like a snake that's ready to attack. How can you just say it's just a name? It's so much more. It's this, you know, it's memory association. It's sort of life association. And I understand to a certain extent where that logic comes from, because I can say if my beloved Raiders changed their name when they moved to my hometown of Las Vegas, I would have been a little shook. Like, that would have been difficult for me. But also then you have to turn around to your other side of that and say, take your fan hat off, and then ask what the real effect of it is. And I think what we have here is what we have so often in pop culture. Like, it's so easy to say, hey, you should never to listen to this person's music or watch this person's movies because of these things they've been associated with. And it's easy to say that until it hits one of the artists or one of the actors that you love. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, no. This one is different. And look, we all do it. It's just, I think this has been a line for so many fans that are saying, no, this isn't like the other issues we've been talking about. This is just a team name of something I support, because when you love it, it's harder to see the hurt that it can cause. It doesn't make it right. I'm just saying that I think that's part of the logic stream.
I think in most instances, the useful exercise is imagine the thing that I disagree with most coming from the person I love the most, and imagine the thing that I would agree with the most coming from a person I despise. And once you flip the perspectives, you can generally get the best response of how I'm going to react to this. And it, this is the other dumb thing that always comes up in this, is because the only spot of true fandom I have comes with Notre Dame. And the one thing people always bring up with, well, what if all of a sudden people with Irish, you know, Irish blood in their veins, with an Irish background, decide that Fighting Irish is a name that they don't like anymore and they want gone? And I always said, that's great. The feelings of those people matter to me a lot more than a mascot whose name doesn't change my experiences with the school, doesn't change what I accomplished as a player at that school, what my family's relationship with that school has been. Like, all of the meaningful parts of our relationships with teams are about experiences and tend to be about people. The name to me is so far down on that list that I can't understand what the fight is for wanting to keep it. Like, my high school did this years ago, like four or five years ago. We were the Northwest Catholic Indians. That high school looked at this when things were being talked about originally back then and said, you know what, we're going to change our name to the Lions. We feel like it's the right thing to do at this point in time. And there were people that actually, like, put up a fight on that. And I looked around and I said, guys, we don't go here anymore. So, like, the other alumni, like, we don't go here anymore. Why are you going to be this bothered by something? And people were talking about maybe giving less money to the school and all that. And I'm just like, if the name is your basis for supporting this thing, can you really claim to love it all that much?
Well, and I definitely see that side. What I've been asking myself to do in my life, and everybody that listens knows how much pride means to me. Pride Month is a big month, and that's something gay rights is something LGBTQ rights or something I fight hard for. And I find myself saying, how many things did I reimagine in my life when the people in my life started to say, hey, this is hurtful? And as I reimagine those things, and I'd look at it and say, okay, then I'm going to eliminate it. And I, to that point, I think we need to all start asking the question, that same question across the board. To your point, Mike, if it's hurtful to somebody, and the Redskins name, as we've learned, is to so many, then it's worth looking at.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
We're going to head over to the Shell Penzoa Performance Line for some Straight Talk, Straight Talk Wireless, where we're joined by Jason Reed of the Undefeated. Time for some Straight Talk. Jason, first and foremost, man, thanks for joining us early in the morning. Appreciate you, and hope you're well, my friend. We'll get to the second nugget, but let's start where we just were with the Redskins and obviously renewed pressure yesterday. What was your reaction as we started to see some of the sponsors come out and make big statements, including FedEx?
Yeah, Fitz, I'll tell you, I spent a lot of a lot of years covering that team for the Washington Post, first as one of the beat writers who traveled with the team, and then as a general sports columnist for the paper. And during those years, this was a subject that always came up. I mean, this is a subject that's been coming up, I believe Tony Kornheiser wrote about this 30 years ago when he was a columnist at the Post. I did not think we would ever be at the point we are now. And that point is, I think there's so much pressure on Dan Snyder in this situation that something is going to change. Either the name will be changed and he will have to come into this new era and understand that this is where we have to be in terms of how the country feels about these things, or other changes will occur, because I can't see him staying with this position that he has held for many years, that I will never change the name of this team.
And Jason, we've seen so many things that we would never have expected to see from the NFL, from teams responding to things already. Do you think, as Tony brought up, I heard on PTI, that there could be any pressure coming from the NFL to Dan Snyder on this particular issue?
Oh, absolutely, Mike. I think we're at a point right now where, I don't have any reporting on this. I want to say this is just my opinion, but I believe Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, if he has not already had, he will soon have some very frank talks with Dan Snyder as to where we're at right now and what needs to happen. I believe there will be mounting pressure within the league from the other owners as well, because remember, fellas, the NFL has taken steps with regard to race and its feelings about these things and where it's standing that it has never done before. Roger Goodell, about a month ago, came out with that video saying that Black Lives Matter, in support of the quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, the players who came out with their video. They said that Roger in the video said that the league erred in how it viewed the protest, and that the league would stand with these players. The league has done so many things now to try to say and to try to show that it's trying to evolve. Fellas, it really undercuts that narrative if that name stays. So I think the pressure is mounting. I think it's going to come from not just externally but internally. And I think that we are really on the cusp of something that I never thought would happen.
We're speaking to Jason Reed from the undefeated Golic and Wingo ESPN Radio. So, Jason, you, having been around the organization and been around Dan Snyder so much, I do want to stress, I think people can evolve, right? Like, people can say one day, hey, I'm never going to do that, and a few years later say, I've evolved my way of thinking. I've got a broader scope of this. I have an understanding. So he could turn around and decide he wants to change the name. What's more likely in your mind? He sells the team and walks away, or changes the name?
Fitz, the thing is, you're absolutely right. People can evolve. But people sometimes are just, they're more forced to do things and evolve. I think that
fair.
If he does change the name, it will be because of the pressure. I don't think it's something he'll want to do. I'll tell you guys a quick story. One year, a long time ago, when I was covering the team as a beat writer, I was in the press room, the old press room there, working late one night at the team's facility, and an executive came in, and we had a conversation. And he told me the reason that Dan would never change the name is because Dan understands that, look, for a generation, the team has not been what it once was when Joe Gibbs was winning Super Bowls, and that Dan's big fear was that if he ever gave in to changing the name, they would lose that link to the history, which is why fans still kept coming to the stadium and why fans kept still, you know, purchasing merchandise. So it wasn't just that Dan loved the name from his youth when he was a kid and a fan. It was that from a business standpoint, there were real concerns internally about changing the name of this team. So I still don't think he wants to change it. I mean, based on everything I've talked to people in the last past couple of years about that hasn't changed. But with FedEx coming out, with other sponsors, you know, obviously saying, hey, look, this is not a good idea, with what the league is doing with regard to race relations, again, I can't underscore this enough. You can't have the policy that the NFL now has about wanting to be a leader in ending racism and having that name. So the walls are closing in.
Jason, I'm curious, we've talked so much about what's here in the immediacy and the sweeping change that has been taking place all over that has helped drive a lot of this. I'm curious how much something hanging off in the distance might be affecting this right now. All of the pressure that we've seen and opposition that this team is facing from the district and the thought process of Dan Snyder, who has wanted to bring this team back to D.C., who's talked about it potentially after their lease on the land at FedEx Field is over in 2027. Is that something that's starting to creep more and more into the picture here, that idea of the things that you want as a franchise and where you want to be might be hindered by this?
I think that clearly the stadium issue is a thing that the other owners of the team, the executives of the team, they can't ignore. Look, let's just be honest about it. FedEx Field is one of the worst stadiums in the NFL. It's not a good fan experience. The situation of getting in and out of there is horrible. There's nothing more that they would love than to have this a sparkling new gem of a city of a stadium within D.C. I mean that's been a goal of many people at that facility for a very long time, and that's not going to happen with this name. So yeah, Fitz just mentioned previously about people evolving. People evolve as a matter of a practical decision for a lot of reasons as well. It's not something that they're thinking all of a sudden becomes enlightened because they want to be a better person. They want the money. And yeah, that is a situation that's on the horizon, and clearly, if the name does not change, that's not going to happen. So we could be having not just the external pressure of everything else, but the fact that, hey, that stadium, if we want to get it, we got to do something.
We're speaking to Jason Reed from the Undefeated on Golic and Wingo. Jason Fitz in for Senior and Trey, and Mike Golic Jr. with us also. So, Jason, I want to get to another big conversation point, and you tweeted out, you had this article yesterday, broke the news that the NFL is going to have Lift Every Voice, commonly referred to as the Black National Anthem, played before every game in Week 1. So, obviously, that's caused a lot of reaction. At this point, what's the NFL's mindset in doing this for 1 week?
Well, Fitz, here's the thing. People are looking at this, a lot of people, and saying, well, the NFL is just pandering. It's just a performative measure. It's not actually something substantive. But I'll tell you, fellas, I talk to a lot of people who have been on the opposite side of the table from the NFL for years, pushing the NFL to change its thinking, to understand that 70%+ of its workforce, which is African-American, that there are issues that relating to them, that if they could just see these gestures, it would help, along with other substantive changes. And one of my sources called me the other day. He was looking at my timeline, and there were many people complaining that the NFL was going to do this stuff with the anthem and patches on jerseys to commemorate people who have lost their lives in police brutality. And this source said to me, "Nah, Jay, this is good. This is important because it's the league continuing to show that what Roger said in that video that they're committed to. I mean, these are signs. These are steps. And yeah, is this going to change police brutality? Is this going to change, redlining and systemic oppression, all these types of things? No, but we pushed the league for years to do more and show more, and now that it's doing it, hey, the people who have been on the opposite side of the table, we applaud this. Now, a lot of people will tell you, fellas, that none of this matters because Cap doesn't have a job in the NFL, Colin Kaepernick. And I get that. I get the league has a credibility deficit. I get that the league, a lot of people look at it as hypocrisy. But I think if people are telling you they want to change and they're doing things to show efforts to change, I think you take it and you say, hey, let's see where this goes. A lot of people tell you, no, we're not going to see where it goes until Cap has a job. But I think that's the other end of it.
Well, Jason, let me sort of play devil's advocate on some of that. I mean, Colin Kaepernick being signed to the NFL would take one owner making that decision. Roger Goodell can't, in essence, force a team to sign Colin Kaepernick. Roger Goodell can put these sorts of systems in place through the league office, right? So isn't it fair to judge the two in completely separate categories?
Fitz, and that's what my source who called me the other day when he saw my Twitter timeline, blown up into fights. Roger, people will tell you, people, again, who are on the opposite side of the table fighting for the league to improve its hiring practices with regard to diversity, fighting for the league to show more that it actually does get it. These people will tell you that Roger has been on the right side of this, that Roger truly does care. Now, Roger is an employee. He's a spectacularly compensated employee, but he is an employee, okay? And the reality of it is, fellas, is that Roger can't make owners sign Kaepernick. Now, I will say Roger's main job is to make money for his owners and to defend his owners, and Roger has said through the years things that aren't credible that, hey, you know, if anybody thought Colin Kaepernick could help, they would sign him. And, I mean, when Roger said that stuff, it rang very hollow because the league, as you guys know, exhumes failed quarterbacks every week, brings them into the building on Tuesdays for workouts and says, hey, you guys can't play. You can't chew gum and drop back at the same time, but we're going to give you a job because we got an injury on the roster. So it's not credible that Colin has not been in the league because he's not good enough when there are a ton of quarterbacks in the NFL who are not good enough. But Roger, overall, I would say, has tried to be on the right side of this, and Fitz, what you said is absolutely true. He can't force these people to sign him, and you can look at these, you can look at the situations as not just one or the other, but in things combined.
You guys should follow him on Twitter at JReedESPN. Check out the article out there on Lift Every Voice. Great work by you as always, Jason. Thanks for the time this morning. Really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, fellas.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
Lewis, happy 4th of July weekend, my friend. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us. What was your reaction when you saw the sponsors start to put their money where their mouth is and insist on a name change for the Washington football team?
Well, Jason, look, the language of money is something that all NFL owners, you know, have in common. I mean, that's something that they all understand. It's something that, by and large, drives all of their decisions, you know, as far as what kind of policies that they enact. So when a group of investors who control and manage over $600 billion worth of assets tell a group of companies, like they told Nike, like they told Pepsi, like they told FedEx, that it's time for you to disassociate yourself with the Washington football team and their racially insensitive, you know, mascot, then you're going to listen. And you're going to pass that message on, just like Fred Smith and FedEx passed it on to Dan Snyder. And you're going to make your demands and outline your demands very clearly and very succinctly. Change the name. Simple as that. Because money talks. Fred Smith understands that. Dan Snyder understands that. The people who are controlling $620 billion worth of assets understands that. And that's how, whether we like it or not, a lot of things get done in this world, and especially in the world of professional sports. It's about leverage and money. And you know, people may not like that. Some people may be looking at Fred Smith and looking at FedEx and looking at Nike and saying, hey, look, this isn't something that was instinctively the right thing for you to do. You're only doing it because it's a financial, you know, financially driven type of thing. Well, that may be the case. But the fact of the matter is, this is the kind of thing that gets the ball rolling and gets changes happening, that leads to changes happening. And in this case, so Dan has dug his feet in the ground in the past about this issue, as far as him saying he will never change the name, and you can print that in caps and sticking his chest out and saying this is something that he believes, you know, the tradition should be kept in place and the name should be kept in place. Well, we're going to see. Because the people who are demanding this change have a lot of power, have a lot of juice. And like I said, the language of money is something he understands very well. And rich guys don't get rich because they like having money taken out of their pockets, or they're willing to let money be taken out of their pockets. They get rich because they like holding on to money. So if he wants people to still, you know, pay him the kinds of money that FedEx has paid him for the naming rights to the stadium that his football team plays in, he's going to have to consider changing that name. That's just the bottom line. So I think we're all going to settle in and see how this one plays out.
Talking to Lewis Riddick with us here. Lewis, you were part of that organization for a while, both as a scout and director of pro personnel. So you've seen this up close. And I'm curious, Lewis, from two perspectives, do you think there's a better chance that we see pressure added to this by players on the Washington football team, or would that more likely come from the league office and Roger Goodell, who have been involved in these conversations with renewed effort based on the current ways of the world?
I think, to answer both of those questions, I think from players' perspective, I think everyone overall in society is much more empathetic towards these types of things, towards racially charged issues, even if it isn't something that necessarily, you know, directly pertains to you. So I think the players themselves will be empathetic towards this issue, and they will be, it will be something that they may not weigh in heavily on, but I'm sure they will obviously support anything that promotes racial equality, and that is that promotes sensitivity and empathy towards a certain group of people who feel as though they are being disrespected in this way. So I'm sure they will express that. How deep into the weeds certain players on that football team will get, that remains to be seen. Okay. Now, as far as the league, obviously if the league wants to put its money where its mouth is and truly wants to be looked at as someone, as a group that is, you know, that is empathetic and that is genuine in terms of their, you know, promotion of racial equality, and they're putting, you know, their might and their brand behind promoting racial equality, then it's obviously something that they will put, you know, they will put their stamp of approval on as well, as far as saying, hey, look, this is something that, Dan, you need to do, and this is something we need to come to a resolution about, and one that satisfies everyone here. This is something that we need to talk about, something we need to get done. Yeah, they will do that, because you can't, but you can't go halfway with this kind of thing. You cannot say, well, you know what, if we start going down this road, then we're going to have to change, you know, we're going to have to open up, you know, discussions about all names that could be racially insensitive, and we don't want to go down the road. Now, that doesn't wash anymore. It's either you are against racism, or basically you I don't want to necessarily say you promote it, but either you're against it or you're not. And I think the league is going to have to, without a doubt, make it very clear that this is something that he needs to consider and something that needs to get done, because if they don't, then once again, their credibility is going to be under siege and be under attack. And that is something that, in this climate, nobody wants when it comes to issues involving race and being racially insensitive.
We're talking to ESPN NFL analyst Lewis Riddick on Golic and Wingo. So, Lewis, I said earlier to Jason Reed, there are certain things that Roger Goodell can do. He can initiate league action items, but he can't force a team to sign a player. It's not like he can sign Colin Kaepernick. So how can what's the right way to compartmentalize the job that Roger Goodell is doing in this new environment?
Yeah, I mean, look, Roger can only do what he can do. He can only stand on his own beliefs and kind of express to the owners his own beliefs and really convey to them how his own moral compass is leading him to make the decisions that he's trying to make on behalf of the National Football League. But he cannot, you're right, he cannot force owners to do things that they don't want to do. And we've seen that play itself out over time, especially when we're talking about things like, for instance, you know, minority representation in executive positions across the NFL and minority representation when we're talking about head coaches and, you know, offensive coordinators and the like. We've seen that play itself out. Roger has kind of put himself out there as far as where he stands on that and how he believes that needs to change. And the owners have kind of put themselves out there, obviously, too, as far as where they stand with that, which is obviously they don't really see a big problem right now. Otherwise, they would be changing it. So it is a delicate dance for him. It is something that he, over the years, obviously, you know, he works for them. But at the same time, I mean, he is a man who has his own feelings and beliefs and his own sense of morality on these kinds of things, and it's got to be tough for him to navigate that. But I think what you have seen recently, obviously, is the fact that he is going to, right now at this point in his tenure, go ahead and make it very well known where he stands on the issues of race and the issues of equality. And what the owners are going to do, that's on them. So I think I don't necessarily want to say he is split from them, but he's obviously letting it be known that, look, I'm an individual also who has his own set of morals as far as how I see this kind of thing. And what the owners do, that doesn't necessarily represent how I feel. And I think that's the way many people are approaching this kind of thing, because, look, it's never the wrong time to do the right thing, and people need to do the right thing. And when you're talking about issues of race, I think all bets are off in this current environment, as they should be. Simple as that.
Follow him on Twitter at LRiddickESPN. Lewis is always strong stuff, man. We appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much for hanging out.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. Very interesting where that went.
This whole thing has been a dumpster fire.
That.
Whoa.
Bites.
This can't be happening.
What the hell?
You know the drill. We like to take some of the best moments from over the course of the week in audio and give them to you in a way only we do on this show. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. Nobody else has ever done this. It's called That Bites. I'm Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, Mike Golic Sr., sitting with Mike Golic Jr. I would like to revisit some of this and to give you guys some of our favorite moments of audio from the week. And it starts with, I think, one of my favorite Stephen A. Smith moments of all time. Teams, Mike, are going to start reporting to the NBA bubble in Orlando over the next week. Stephen A. Smith on First Take had the realest statement on the biggest challenge for players in the first 3 weeks when he said this.
Here's the reason you got to be worried. I wanted to hold off on saying this, y'all, but I can't hold it no more. Do we really think that our the recreational activities, what these guys are accustomed to, are going to be compromised for 3 months? I mean, somebody's got to say it. You really, really think that people are going to be without their wives or their woman? Okay? I mean, the guys that are married without their wives, the guys that ain't married without their woman, you really, really think they honoring a bubble for 3 months and are going to deprive? Somebody got to tell the truth.
Stephen A., they've set up ping pong tournaments.
They're allowed to bring their significant other down there after a month.
Hey, listen, after a month, I just said forget 3 months. They're going to struggle with 3 weeks. Why you think they won in Vegas? Listen, can we stop?
That Bites.
I just love, like, Jay Will and Molly and everyone else throwing all these, like, logical reasons at Stephen A. And it's like, guys, I just wanted to talk about sex on air. Like, please just let me have this moment to talk about sex on air.
And we now know that a dry spell for Stephen A. is definitely under 3 weeks. So take the under on dry spells for Stephen A. Woo!
Lift Stephen A. Smith up in prayer during this quarantine. Times. Oh, the times, they have been hard. Coming up next on this, we're going to see what happens on the court with how the players have stayed busy over the course of their nearly four-month hiatus. How did Thunder big man Steven Adams work on his rebounding skills when he was in New Zealand? And I'm not talking about rebounding from women. Here's that.
I was boxing out cows and all that, bro. I was on the farm. I was hitting cows.
That Bites.
My favorite part about that soundbite is in the longer form, there's about a 30-second preamble of a question that leads to a 4-second answer about boxing out cows from NBA big man and hero Steven Adams.
I also like that he said, I was on the farm, in case we were curious. Like, and if we thought it was just going down the road and he's like, oh, there's a cow, let's box him out.
Seems like a thing that Steven Adams both could and should be doing.
Next up on That Bites, Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, Jason Fitz, Mike Golic Jr. Major League Baseball will not be in a bubble, which makes Buster Olney skeptical that a season ever happens. This is what he told Darian Mel.
How confident are you that this season gets finished?
0%. Absolutely 0% based on what I'm hearing.
How confident are you that this season gets started with actual games?
I would put that at 5%. I think that they're going to at least try in the next couple weeks, but I... especially in the face of these spiking numbers, it wouldn't surprise me if it derails quickly.
I love that, like, 5%.
That Bites.
What the sound
I don't know how the game
Jason,
works.
Is this your first time here?
I love that 5% was hopeful, Buster. Like, you know, you guys laugh at me, I'm a beacon of light, right? Buster's like, I don't know, maybe 5% on that. 0% it gets completed, but 5%, that's hope.
Buster has loved his Dr. Doom role in all this. He hasn't loved it because he loves baseball and he wants it to be back. He misses baseball. If you miss baseball, and clearly according to Buster, can't count on actual baseball coming back, tune in tomorrow night for an MLB Classic doubleheader. Game 6 of the 2011 World Series, Game 7 of the 2016 World Series, all presented by Progressive Insurance. Coverage begins at 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Speaking of Darian Mel, here's my dad.
There have been people going on the show with Mari and
and Mel, Dari and Mel. I'm combining them. Dari and Mel.
That bites.
See, that usually happens with Marty McGee and Ryan Smith, and Marty and McGee is we end up calling him Marty McGee or Ryan Smith and combining them somehow, when instead this happened with Dari and Mel.
Wait. Ryan McGee and who?
Marty Smith.
I thought you said Ryan Smith.
I said we either do Marty McGee or Ryan Smith. We combine them in one of those two ways.
I thought you were a little off there. You know what? I was wrong, my goalie.
Easy there, chili dog boy. Well, You've been wrong about plenty already this morning.
Oh, chili dogs are trash. Bryson DeChambeau hit a 376-yard drive in Thursday's first round of the Rocket Mortgage Classic. So we got to know, what in the world is he eating? He told us.
Well, I'll start off by saying I don't necessarily eat everything or anything I want. There is this overlying principle of a 2-to-1 protein or carb to protein ratio. So that is first and foremost. I try and retain that throughout the whole day with everything I eat and drink. I would say that in the mornings, I usually have four eggs, five pieces of bacon, some toast, and two protein shakes. And then throughout the course of the day, I'll have, you know, a Go Macro bar here and there. I'll have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I'll have another protein drink. I'll have at least two protein drinks on the golf course. So every, you know, six holes. So you go, you know, 6-12, and then after the round, I'll have one. After that, I'm snacking when I'm practicing. After, go back to the hotel, eat a dinner, steak, potatoes. And I'll have two protein shakes with it there as well. So, you know, I'm consuming around, I'd say, 6 to 7 of those Orgain protein shakes a day now, where I used to be, you know, 2 or 3. So as I've upped the weight, upped everything, I just had to consume a lot more. Luckily, I like the taste of those shakes, so I can take those pretty easily.
What would be your caloric intake?
Shoot, I have no idea. Probably, if you were to add all that up, it'd be around 3,000 to 3,500, I think. Something like that.
That bites.
Throw some heavy whipping cream in there and come talk to me in the 5,500 calorie a day. The farts. Oh, the farts. They are coming. And as the pandemic moves into July 4th weekend, we're still learning a lot about it. So once again, here comes a known doctor, my dad.
I was going to very easily say either on this and Cam Newton. But I think since the not knowing has been upped this year with the COVID. Thank you. That word is the word I was looking for.
Double whammy there.
That bites.
The not well done knowing by and the COVID.
That's
impressive.
I can't even preach on it. We all know I can't read.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
I think we've had some cool moments at ESPN. Mike Golic Jr., myself, Jason Fitz, Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We've done some work together that I'm really proud of, and we've done some things that I've been particularly excited about. I'll be honest about that. You know, it's been a crazy ride. There are a few moments that I think have been cooler than the moment that I found out that Mike Golic Jr. and I were going to be able to be involved in the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest on the 4th of July. I hear Adam Amin do it and did it so perfectly. Mike, I'll be honest, I'm a little nervous. We got big shoes to fill. He's amazing, and this is going to be a big one. But the good news is that, you know, I can act a fool, and you can handle all the professionalism. That's what we're going to rely on.
Exactly. Well, and we're going to rely on our rock in all of this, because when you think of Major League Eating, I think of one family in particular, that being the Shays. And we're delighted to be joined now by Richard Shay, the president of Major League Eating, with us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. His brother George is the one that you hear doing the great announcements for all of the eaters and competitors every year in this. So, Rich, we appreciate the time this morning. What should we expect? You are the veteran in this situation. You are the voice of this call every year in such a phenomenal way. So what should we expect, and what do we need to do to not screw this up for you?
Well, you can't screw it up. I mean, you know, competitive eating, the production is raw, but the hot dogs are cooked, right? It's going to be a new year. I don't know what to expect. It's we're in the MLE bubble. You know, we've never done this before. But I think you're going to see some amazing competitors do some amazing things with the Nathan's Famous hot dogs. We're missing a couple competitors because of the quarantine situation and all of that. But we do have Joey Chestnut going for his 13th and Mickey Sudo going for her 7th title.
So, Rich, stick there for a second because I think a lot of people are curious how this is going to go down in a safe environment. So walk us through the process of safety and how you guys address that.
So we, you know, typically, as you know, there's tens of thousands of people packed on the corner of Surf and Stillwell Avenue in Coney Island, you know, in the corner there where Nathan started back in 1916. So it's a pilgrimage. It's a bucket list item. That is off the table this year, obviously. No crowds. So undisclosed location. It's a very big sort of warehousey kind of room. It'll be a more studio-like setting, fewer people. I'll be 6 feet away from you and Mike. You know, the eaters will be 6 feet apart. There's all kinds of things that we have to do to make it happen, but the city's on board, so we're excited. And once we get through sort of that formality, we're going to see the eating. And the question for me, this dynamic, which I'm sure we'll talk about on the call, you know, does the crowd boost Joey? Is that what buoys Joey to 74, the world record? Does the crowd boost Mickey? Will the lack of crowd hurt their totals, you know, diminish their performance? I'm actually thinking the controlled environment, the AC, which we never have, it's typically 90 degrees, you know, humid out there. I actually think that may aid the eaters, so we might see some big numbers.
Talking to Richard Shea, the president of Major League Eating, with us and going to be our analyst in the booth, as he always is, on the call for the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. You mentioned the two names that I think are at the top of everybody's list when it comes to this. Certainly Joey Chestnut going for number 13 in this. Mickey Sudo, the top female eater on the tour. And interesting to me here is one of the other male competitors, Nick Weary, actually dating Mickey Sudo on this one. So we have maybe the first couple of competitive eating. How do you think that affects the way we go into this competition?
Well, you know, a family that eats together stays together, right? I think that they train together, right? They help one another out. Nick is actually an interesting story. He's the 8th ranked eater in the world. He's in this game this year because Matt Stoney couldn't make it because Cuomo put a quarantine order on California. Fortunately, we had Joey in town sooner, so we'll miss Matt. But Nick is a guy to watch. You know, Nick Weary, Darren Breeden, and Jeff Esper, all battling for what we would anticipate is the number 2 spot. But if Joey had a bad quarter, like a bad few minutes out of the gate, these guys could catch him. So all three of those guys are very well equipped, and Nick will be an interesting story to watch tomorrow.
We're talking to Richard Shea, president of Major League Eating. Golic and Wingo, Jason Fitz, Mike Golic Jr. in. So with that mindset, when you're talking about the other guys in this competition and they understand how great and how dominant Joey has been, how do you walk the line as a competitor to make sure that you're not pressing and trying to do too much when you know the numbers that Joey's going to put up?
You know, I really would have to defer to the eaters. I think what I do know as an onlooker and a veteran is it's about the pace, right? So it's the dogs per minute. So you want to get to it. If you're an eater, you want to get to an ideal DPM for yourself and then maintain it for as long as you can. And we should have a tracker on the screen tomorrow for the viewers. You see how long we can maintain that DPM, or the eater can maintain a certain DPM. Joey might hit 11, right? He's not going to maintain that, but if he settles out at around 7 for the balance of the contest, that's a hell of a DPM, right? So the other eaters, that's how they're thinking about this. They have to think about themselves. In this environment, they'll have 6 feet to play in. Typically, they're shoulder to shoulder, so they should be able to focus a little better than when they're in the scrum.
Rich, and part of all of this, as you mentioned, the adjustment that's being made by the eaters, certainly within the contest, but also leading up to this. You mentioned the controlled environment, the lack of a crowd and being outdoors in this, but also the lack of a season that Major League Eating has been able to have up until this point. How do you think that affects where everyone comes into this contest at?
Yeah, that's another unanswered question. I mean, there's so many storylines and so many reasons to tune in, right? Because it's just that this is a totally unique year. Typically we had one contest this year. I was down in New Orleans for Blue Runner Foods in early February. I actually went to Mardi Gras, mistakenly, but I came out unscathed. But, you know, we typically have, you know, if you look at April, May, June, these are weekends with 3-4 contests in them, right? So we're all out on the road hosting contests. The eaters are traveling around picking and choosing what they want to compete in, you know, trying to identify which prize package is best for them, this and that. So they are literally in mid-season form when we come into Coney Island. But since there's no season, there's no mid-season form. So it's a big question mark. I don't think it'll impact Joey. I don't think it's really going to impact, you know, Mickey. It's the other eaters we have to keep an eye on.
Rich, what's made Joey so dominant?
I think dedication, passion, you know, it's like Vijay Singh, like Brady, like he never rests, singular focus, great American, you know.
All of those things, as I heard you in the intro say, Joey Chestnut owns America, really resonated over the course of this. Rich, I have to ask you, going into this one, I have a lot of questions, but I think I have one area of similarity. Every day on this show, normally, I get up and I go to work with my dad in very close proximity, a lot of working together. What's it like for you, having to work with your brother in such close proximity through all of this? Certainly, both of you, great showmen, great ambassadors for the sport and for the league, but there's still that family element of having to go to work with someone that you've grown up with for a long time.
Yeah, no doubt. That's why this COVID's actually had a silver lining for me. You know, the office has been closed since mid-March. So, I'm just joking. the thing is, he's a brilliant guy. We have different styles. I was actually talking to a friend of mine who's way into hip hop, and I was like, "There's no beefs. I mean, Meek Mill and Drake are getting along, right? So, what's going on in this world?" But there's actually a rap beef between my brother and I, because I rap under the handle Aquafresh Advanced Whitening, and then he kind of never rapped, and now he's doing it with Badlands. But now you'll see some of that spitting tomorrow. He's a great guy. I love working with him, and we've been good friends since the start.
Rich, we can't tell you how excited we are to be a part of this broadcast tomorrow. You guys can watch it on ESPN noon Eastern. It's going to be exciting, and we're incredibly excited to be a small part of a huge thing. So thanks so much for the time. Can't wait for tomorrow. It's going to be a blast.
Guys, I'm thrilled to have you on board, and we're going to have a lot of fun. It'll be a great holiday.
Thanks absolutely. So much,
Rich. A great celebration for everyone. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, no, I was going to say it's also worth noting that a lot of people talk about the contest and they say the backdrop, so many people hungry. Every year, Nathan's makes a major donation of 100,000 hot dogs and buns to the New York area food bank there. This year, there's certainly going to be an added focus on celebrating the first responders, the people that have stood up and acted and done right by so many through the course of this pandemic, and trying to put the force on that. I know a lot of the eaters are also going to encourage donations to other food banks, causes that are near and dear to them. So there is a lot of very good that comes out of a situation that is also a lot of fun.
Yeah, huge impact that you'll be able to see in tomorrow's broadcast. And I'm just excited to see Mike Golic Jr. and Joey Chestnut, you know, again, because the one time I've ever seen Mike go straight fan child was a couple of years ago. We were at the college football playoff, and I saw Joey Chestnut just standing backstage, and you just saw Mike, I mean, giddy in the corner as he saw Joey Chestnut walking distance from him. I tried to get Joey to pretend he didn't know who you were, but Joey was too nice. He's like, "No, I really like him, and I watch him on TV all the time." So I tried to create beef, and I couldn't do it.
Seeing the mustard belt in person, getting to hold it, reach out, touch it, was one of the true honors of my life. And then a year later, we see Joey at the College Football National Championship down in New Orleans again, and this time I am eating alongside him. It was a bit of an exhibition, eating beignets, and I will never forget this as long as I live. It was one of the most singularly dominant athletic performances I've ever seen in my life. In 4 minutes' time, I ate 14 beignets at that table. Joey ate 74, and I swear to God they shortchanged him. I thought he hit 80. He is a force of nature, Jason. It is unlike anything I've ever seen. I always wanted people to drop like a random person into an NBA or an NFL game just so they could see the speed. That was what happened to me, and I was blown away. It almost singed my eyebrows off.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.